We would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land in which this podcast is recorded and produced, the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nations, whose sovereignty was never ceded and this area's original name was Naam. We pay respects to their elders, past, present and emerging.
Strange things are afoot at the Circle K.
Damn! We're in a tight spot!
Welcome to Music Town. May I service you?
Great Scott! It will never be enough! I only want to hear ya, ya ding dong!
Ugh, as if!
Dignity. Always dignity.
You're listening to You Watched What? I'm Kate.
And I'm Amy.
This week, we watched 9 to 5. How are you, Amy?
Good. I don't have to work 9 to 5, so I'm pretty happy with that at the moment.
Yeah, I felt like when we talk about the movie and just doing a bit of a comparison to what is contemporary office like, I feel like, oh, I'm going to really have to carry the load here. Have you ever had a 9 to 5 like office job?
Nah, I've never worked in an office nice. Ever.
Good life choices.
I'm happy with that too. I do office work. I do a fair bit of admin work for my business. But I can do that anytime I feel like it. So,
see, whereas I just feel really glad that I've avoided finance. I'm not a boss. I'm not my boss. I'm not anyone's boss. And I don't have to do any finance stuff. I am happy with that. What have you been watching?
I was trying to think of this morning. I was like, what have I been watching? And, yeah, I don't think I've watched anything since...
Since the last time we recorded. Yeah. We picked a really good time. It's like, yeah, our lives are getting really busy again. Anyway.
We're super busy. I don't have time for TV. So I just pretty much find sometimes I'm like, I'll watch something. And then I'm like, I'll just TikTok for a minute. And then it's 2 hours later. And I'm like, I better go to sleep now.
How to suck you in.
There is something that we've both watched, which is the Murdoch Murders.
Yes. Okay, everybody, we're going to turn into a true crime podcast for a few minutes. But yes, I became aware of this through the really great podcast Sinisterhood. This is at least a couple of murders and it has, you know, there's been a verdict now from a jury of peers. So at least a couple of murders related to this law, like this family of lawyers in South Carolina. And it's one of those situations where they're really big deals in a small town that no one outside before the news really got out, no one outside of that area really knew who these people were, but they have a lot of power and influence in their small town. And Alec Murdoch has now been... he's been convicted of killing his wife and younger son. So there's a three-part documentary on Netflix, which I thought was quite good. I knew a bit about this case already and it really went in and talked to a lot of people who are very closely involved in this really horrible boating crash that was caused by Paul drunk boating, the younger son, who was then murdered.
Murdered, yeah. Poor Paul, as his dad calls him. My son, poor Paul. Yeah. Convicted, thrown in jail for that alone. It was really interesting, though, and it's definitely one that a lot of people are going to have a lot of opinions on. My opinions are that there was a lot of bodies around for this one family. I don't know any other families that would be involved somehow or be around when so many people have died kind of in suspicious circumstances.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know anyone who lives like that, but I certainly in my life have never come across anyone who's had anybody I've ever met who's had like a whole lot of suspicious deaths happen.
Yeah,
neither
multiple.
More related to
like
the family.
We're talking,
like it's just not, it doesn't
it was
happen.
Something like 5 bodies in 6 years that are connected with this family. Not saying they all murdered them. Not saying
they're no.
Some may have been accidents. Oh, I'm suspicious. I think they've. I don't think any were a true accident.
It's weird because normal people don't have.
No, it's soap opera level stuff. Deaths. It's like this is like a telenovela. Telenovela. Yeah, it's that kind of level. I mean,
that's not a Spanish pronunciation, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's like a soap opera.
Yeah, it's weird.
No one comes here for our amazing pronunciation.
But I am looking forward to the next couple of episodes that will probably be released now that there is a verdict and there is more stuff that would have come out at trial or stuff that they had that they now can put out there that they may not have been able to before. Yeah. Mm. Well, for the doco makers, I mean.
True. Oh, yeah. There'll probably also just be a lot of people in town who are a lot more confident speaking up about things that have happened in the past that they were afraid to talk about. Now that that one main
How many uncles
guy.
Are there, though?
Oh, I don't know.
Because I only really spoke about one brother, but I feel like there's more brothers. And I wonder if people,
took all of the guns.
Yeah, and we say people will be, more comfortable, but I don't know about these brothers. Like,
I mostly have been getting all caught up on Poker Face, although there's one new episode that I need to get caught up on, and I am loving it.
Yeah,
such a good show.
I watched a couple of episodes last night, actually, and I watched it with my 12-year-old, and he was watching this episode and he goes, "Oh, her voice is so relaxing." Which I just found
it is,
funny.
Though.
I don't think Natasha Lyonne's voice has ever been described as relaxing. I feel like it scratches an itch in your brain that's like satisfying. I don't know if I would have described it as relaxing. Yeah. And I don't think I've ever heard anyone describe it as relaxing.
I don't know if I'd say relaxing, but I like it. There is something soothing about it. Yeah, it scratches the itch. It's just that raspy huskiness. Yeah.
Yeah.
She's great.
It's a great voice. But it was just funny, her voice is so relaxing. But he also kind of said it in a way of it shouldn't be, but I really like it. Yeah.
But no, I've been enjoying that heaps. And otherwise I've been actually I've been working and going out of my house and sometimes going out of my house to work. So I've been busy.
Yeah, it's busy time. Everything's kind of going back to normal. So somewhat normal, our new normal.
Normal-ish. Shall we get into it?
Yeah, let's get into it.
Would you two show a little spunk? I mean, what are you, a man or a mouse? I mean, a woman or a wouse?
So I picked 9 to 5 because I hadn't seen it, but I felt like I would really love this movie. I'm currently feeling very smug because I loved this.
Oh, did you? Okay.
I did. It was so much fun.
I found it to be quite chaotic. My kids wanted to know if it was the musical, and I was very confused because there is a 9 to 5 musical. And
it
must have been in Melbourne. They were like, they were advertising it on the radio last year. And I was like, oh, okay.
We've ignored
that. Completely, but apparently there is a 9 to 5 musical.
Awesome. Because it starts with the Dolly song, which absolutely slaps, is fantastic. We kick off, it's a really good credit sequence. It really, I felt like, gives you a great sense of what the movie's going to be about. Working women who are, just struggling a bit with the balancing of life and work.
Yeah.
And Dolly Parton's going to be a great presence. Immediately. It's like, yep, I know a whole chunk about this movie just from that song and that credit sequence. I love it. We also know from that credit sequence that the fact that originally the film came out with the 9 to 5 spelled out in letters, and since then it's on all of the services in numbers. I find that incredibly annoying and grating in a way that I can't really describe. That? No, I don't know. I haven't found out why. Just okay. that it originally came out in letters and then that someone's changed it to numbers. And so now the movie title is Numbers and it's there as both. And I just find that deeply annoying. But I will get over it because I did enjoy the movie. We get introduced to Jane Fonda's character, who's in this like beautiful, very fussy blue and white suit, which I loved. I mostly want to talk about the costumes here. I pretty much, we could just do an episode about the costumes because all of the costumes are so good.
Mm-hmm. They were really good. It was interesting when I looked up what year it was made in, because I couldn't work out for a little while whether it was the 70s or the 80s. And
it was released
in 1980, which means it was possibly shot in 79.
Yep.
Or the possible crossover. So that's why I was like, right, well, that's why I can't work out what era, what decade we're in, because
it's
we're kind of in both. Yeah.
And it is. It does feel, I guess, if it's that turn of the decade, it feels very, very both. Jane Fonda's suit feels almost kind of like early 70s, like kind of fancy. Like, I think the costuming is amazing for the characters and just for the how you get to see them progress and change, while also being really flattering to all of those main characters. And you know I get a bit hung up on costuming generally, but, yeah, so I truly love this. That suit feels like she's too dressed up for the job because it's her first day. We find out very quickly she's got this job. She's never had a job before, but she's just gotten divorced and she needs to get a job and support herself for the first time in her life. And so it totally makes sense that she's a little bit overdressed for her first day of work, a little bit fussy, but looks, you know, it's beautiful, but it's too much for this job.
Yes.
So we're like 5 minutes into the movie and I'm like, okay, I want to do my episode cosplay as Lily Tomlin's character in her first outfit with that kind of kimono-y.
Oh, she wears that a few times. I enjoyed that they kind of did like that's your office wear and, you know, it's been a few days so you're wearing that again. I liked that it was kind of more realistic. It's something they don't really do these days in movies. Like it's a different outfit.
And also in TV shows. And it's the thing that sort of frustrates me in TV shows. I know why you've got characters in revolving outfits, you know, to keep it fresh and exciting. But on the other hand, particularly when characters like are supposed to not have very much money, it's quite frustrating. It's like, yes, but this character's complaining about not being able to buy a dress, but I've seen them in 20 dresses this season.
Yeah.
And I liked that this went for that realism of, no, that's actually what currently, because I am going into the office some of the week, I'm thinking really hard. Like on a Tuesday night, I'm like, oh, what would I wear last Wednesday? Because it would be very awkward if I wore literally the same outfit every Wednesday to the office. Yeah. But, you know, my really like nice office wear, I don't have that many pieces of, so I would totally, I want that sort of kimono-y jacket.
It was nice.
It's beautiful. So this black jacket with like the white Japanese sort of patterns, the red lip, the red earring, and she's got like a white or cream blouse. I can't remember if it was pants or black pants or skirt and this butterfly belt buckle. I'm like, I want that outfit.
She wears butterflies a lot, doesn't she?
Yeah. And I like that it gave you this sense of, it really felt like a real person choosing clothes that are office appropriate and reflect their personality a bit. It felt like,
I felt very realistic. All the three main characters were like very different styles.
The costuming was, primo, different styles, but it felt very, very, it felt real. It felt like this is how real people would have dressed. It's how real people approach their office wear. Also, Lily Tomlin was amazing in this. Immediately it was like, yeah, I wish I worked for a Violet. I guess I have worked for some kinds of, you know, versions of that character in the past, and she's exactly the kind of person I like working with. She, like, at the start, she doesn't want to take on a new person and train them, but we only ever see her being kind to Judy, and then as the plot moves on and they become closer friends, it's like, Violet's exactly the kind of person you want to work for, and also she bloody deserves the promotion that, spoiler alert, she's going for at the start of the movie and then doesn't immediately get. Lily Tomlin's always amazing. Her and Jane Fonda have this, like, very long career of working together multiple times. So Lily Tomlin is Violet, who's been in the company for 12 years. She's a widow with a lot of kids, and she's going for promotion and is very much this sort of 70s career woman. And Judy, who has just gotten divorced and is in her first job, it starts the movie off really nicely, where it's like you learn a lot very quickly about the workplace and who they are. We meet Roz, who is the admin for the boss. We haven't met Mr. Hart, the boss, yet, but we learn that he's got these rules about the office where you can't have photos on your desk or your coffee cups on your desk or plants. Like, we see the office and it's grey and horrible, and very quickly know, oh, wow, okay, so we're going to meet Mr. Hart and he's going to be an asshole. And Roz, he's office spy. This is one of those things that immediately was like, two things hit me really, really quickly as a person who's worked in many offices. I've got to be very, very upfront. I don't currently work with a Roz or a Mr. Hart, but I have. I've definitely worked with many a Roz in the past, the kind of person who you
absolutely
you couldn't gossip to, and you would be very careful about talking what about anything to make sure that they weren't in earshot.
She
100% is a character based on there are actual real people out there like that.
Right.
Absolutely.
Can I ask you now, I think it was about this point of the movie that I went, what do they do in this office? What kind of office is this? And I was maybe I've missed it. And then at the end of the movie, I still have no idea what they actually do.
No idea.
Good. I was just wondering, maybe I did miss it.
Nope.
But no. Okay.
I think they have
they answer a lot of phone calls and be like, jargon, office jargon, more office jargon, hang up the phone. And I was like, doesn't give me any insight about anything. And then they're talking about warehouses and putting
inventory.
I was like, I have no idea what's happening.
100% you picked up, and I think it was really intentional and really clever. The jargon was spot on. I think probably offices, I don't know, I was a tiny baby then. There's a lot of dictaphone stuff, which I assume means that you've got a lot of people like recording what they want to go out as memos and letters, and that's a whole lot of people who are typing them up. I assume that's what it was really like. Inventory. I don't know what the inventory is. They never tell us. The company, I think, was called Consolidated. Like, it's literally just a bunch of words that are like, this will sound just convincingly enough. Yes. But no, we never actually find out what they do or sell or make or move around. No.
But we also find out pretty early on that Violet was actually the one that trained Mr. Hart, and now he is the boss.
Yeah.
And so she's salty, as you would be, because she was the one that he started after her. She trained him in this job. They both went for the same position, and he got it because he is a white man.
And we get a clip of her a little bit. We get a short scene a little bit later where we get to see her answering calls and answering things, and you just get,
knows what's going on. Even if we don't know what's going on, she knows what's going on in her job.
It's really well written, because we get that scene where it's like, again, I've worked with Violets too, and it's like someone like this is, you want to work with them, you know? Mm. She's nice. She's funny. She gives you enough of the office gossip, like the avoid the Roses, you know? Here's what's going on. But he's not judgmental or mean. She's really, really competent, really knows her stuff. It's like, she's amazing. You know, really, really quickly in this, and everything we see of her doing her job, even though they don't, and it's just, I think, a beautiful balancing act of not being boring about the office stuff, but being just convincing enough that it's like, oh no, I understand what's going on, and she's great at her job.
She's actually running the show.
Violet's run the world. Yeah.
Yeah.
when we meet Hart, he's like basically goes into, he does all of these terrible mixed metaphors. He does a whole lot of like, oh, you girls never got a chance to play football or baseball. Yeah. And I like,
feel
I
sorry
immediately,
for them for
that. Oh,
I feel sorry for women. They don't know how to be a team because they never played football. And then has the audacity to be like, go and buy my wife a scarf in your lunch break. And she goes, that's not my job. And he's like, I just told you how to be part of a team. You're part of a team.
That conversation was like one of the few moments where I really actually started to feel my hackles go up where I've never had a boss like Hart. Like I've never had a boss this terrible.
That sent you out on errands to buy his wife scarves and things.
That's never happened to me. Okay, so Dabney Coleman is the actor playing Mr. Hart, and I have to say, like, an infuriating character, an amazing performance. He was spectacular, but an infuriating character. I've had the, oh, you're not a team player, you're being difficult conversation with, spoiler alert, terrible managers.
Yeah, because you can't stand up for yourself if you're a woman because
then
you're not part
way,
of the team.
As a way of trying to bully someone, me or a colleague, into doing something that wasn't part of your job, that was usually part of their job, or that they had fucked up and you had to
passing
then
the
fix for them. But yeah, in a way that made it incumbent on you to be a team player. And awesome. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that this does also happen to men. But in my experience, it's happened a lot to me by men. Women.
Yeah.
But I do have to say, like, also, I mean, I've never been in an experience this bad.
Well, no, the early 80s was definitely a different time to now.
Oh, a different time, a different terrible time.
I don't know if they had HR. I don't know if America even has a proper HR. Now, America is a mess.
Okay, the one thing that I did actually like resort to Googling was when they fired a woman for talking about her salary when Roz was listening to people in the toilets. And I thought, I know from Twitter, I think, that in at least most of America, like that's illegal. You can't fire someone for talking. But I thought like, oh, is that an issue in Australia? Because this came up in my very first office job many years ago when I was young.
Really?
That we were told that you weren't allowed to discuss your salary. Like I was flat out told when I started working there that you weren't allowed to talk about that. And then there was a bit of a scandal when someone in management, like I can't remember exactly where in the organisation, but sent out something with sensitive information about people's salaries and accidentally like CC'd a bunch of the people into it. So then a bunch of people found out. And it was a bit of a scandal because across that team in that organization, there were like gaps of up to $20,000 a person per year of what people were earning for exactly the same job. So it was.
Well, that's why they don't want you talking.
Of a drama.
They don't
and
want
that's
people
exactly
to
why they
know
didn't,
that they're worth
didn't
more
want people
than
to
they're
talk.
Getting paid, which is bullshit.
Yeah, that whole like bit where they're just like, actively like, oh no, we definitely need to like crush the union and union bust it, obviously. Like personally I'm not in favor of that. Again, I'm not in a situation now where we're not allowed to talk about it, but I did Google, and in Australia you are it's under the recent changes to the Fair Work Act, but you are allowed to talk about your salary or also just choose not to talk about your salary. No one can force you to talk about your salary in Australia, and you're allowed to talk about it with your colleagues, which is very important for workers who want to actually organise and make sure that they are getting paid what they're worth.
Yeah.
This was a great movie to watch, like, currently. There's a little bit of a there are a lot of films at the moment which are a little bit of the theme of Eat the Rich. And this isn't quite that, but this is very much a you get paid what you're worth and you make sure that you get conditions that are the right conditions for you.
Yes.
And it was fun to watch from that perspective. And then we meet Dolly Parton's character, Dora Lee, who, I mean,
it's gorgeous. How beautiful
she's
is she?
So she's luminous
so
in this.
So beautiful in this.
She's so beautiful and charming and delightful. And it actually hurts a little bit at the start to have everyone in the office shunning Doralee because they all think she's shagging the boss.
Well, and that just because she's too beautiful.
Because she's gorgeous.
And why would he want her to be the assistant if they weren't having an affair?
If he wasn't going to get something else out of it.
Because I think, and because she's so blonde in it too, I think people were just like, well, she's just dumb. She probably can't even do her job. They must be having sex.
And then we get to see a whole bunch of scenes where it's like, no. She's good at her job. She is being
sexually harassed.
Flagrantly sexually harassed by her boss.
Right, and
just fending him off in a very chill but also like extremely practiced way because she's not interested but she also doesn't want to lose her job. Yeah, tolerating it in a way that's like, no one should ever have to do that. Violet was quite unjudgmental until the scarf incident that we'll talk about. But basically also I want to talk about how Doralee's dress in this first scene is so cute and beautiful.
All of her clothing is so good in this movie.
Later on, she's got that jacket that's like it's a vinyl or a patent leather with like a lamb's wool collar. She looks so good in that icy blue.
She wears.
She does look great. But anyway, so we get to see Doralee, who is just beautiful. Mm-hmm. We have a bit of a typewriter montage with Judy where she's doing her job a bit. We get a bit of office gossiping about Doralee. Mm-hmm. Also, I really enjoyed in these first scenes how almost all of the other people in the office are dressed in brown, making our main characters really pop out.
Mm.
And Violet was, pretty unjudgmental about Doralee until the scarf she sent off to buy for Hart's wife is actually a gift for Doralee from Hart as he tries to continually sexually harass her into sleeping with him. And then she's married, she's uninterested, and she handles a level of sexual harassment that I think must have actually, like in real life, if you're being pursued like that, you would be exhausted from the effort of shutting that terrible man down.
Mm-hmm.
And then his wife shows up
she's got a Louis
Vuitton bag.
He's wrestled Doralee to the floor, mind you.
Oh, God.
At this point.
That's right. And he's also like set things up so we could spill some pencils to make her bend over so we can look
at her boobs.
I know.
We found out like she was like, next time you take me to a conference, there better be a conference on. So like he's taking her on trips without her realizing.
What a prick. So anyway, his wife Missy shows up and she's got, you know, a fur coat. She's got Louis Vuitton back when Louis Vuitton was like way more exclusive and harder to get. Not that it's not exclusive and expensive, but no one had that kind of money in the late 70s. And she's trying to talk him into booking a cruise.
Mm-hmm. For
4 weeks, which gives him the opportunity to also be racist as well as sexist. Her heart really is the worst. We get to see Judy struggling with what was a truly terrifying photocopier. In my first couple of jobs.
She was also a bit daft at this point because there was a definite red button that said was like with an X on it that you would try. But no, she kept pressing the green button, which just made things go faster and faster and faster. And I was like, come on. You're better than this. You're smarter than this.
I suspect that photocopiers make people stupider. Just from the fear of interacting with them.
Oh, the smell of
people,
them?
Yeah, people who are smart and good at their jobs interact with photocopiers and become more dumb. I'm pretty sure it's happened to me. Photocopiers are one of the things I'm really happy about. Watching all of these, like, particularly the first day scenes for Judy. And I've been in the position where I was, like, one of the people who was, like, allowed to change the toner in a couple of my workplaces because that was easy enough to fuck up that not everyone was allowed to do it. And I was like sensible enough to change the toner. I was like, you know what's great about my job in the last few years? I don't print anything. I don't deal with photocopiers at all. I love not printing things. It's one of the best. Because paperless earlier society. In my career, I was, when I started in offices, we were very far from paperless. And I would have to do things like print out all of these documents for committee meetings. One of the first things when I got that job was like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to find a way to make all of this emailable so that I do not have to print this shit and send it to people so that they look at it and go, oh, I don't want to read this. And then half of them don't read it. And that was actually like in a job where I managed committees. That was my like personal most satisfying achievement was moving everything to email because photocopiers, terrible. Then Hart makes Judy cry, which is really the point of the photocopier scene, and just really solidifies that Hart's a prick and he is clearly our villain. We see Judy arrive home to her apartment near the airport, and in that period of time, near the apartment near the airport is basically code for it's a shitty apartment because near the airport means loud, lots of noise. And her ex-husband is there dropping off, I guess, the last lot of divorce papers that she's got to sign before everything is like all official.
Finalized.
And then runs off to his midlife crisis car, his red sports car with his secretary that he ran off with after having an affair with her, which is why Judy doesn't like Dora Lee at the start because of the fake past rumor trauma. That, she thinks Dora Lee is just another secretary who's sleeping with her boss, and Judy doesn't approve of that because that's how she lost her terrible husband. So we spent like a decent chunk of time just in the first day getting a good sense of who everyone is and what's happening in the office. Judy's in blue in the next day, closer to what the rest of her colleagues are wearing, but still like a thread of that colour, which again is just like beautiful costume storytelling. This is where we get to see that scene of Violet just basically showing us that she's extremely good at her job, even though we never know what her job actually is.
It is. No.
We know what it's not, though. It's not supposed to be shopping for scarves or making coffee for her terrible boss.
Exactly.
Doralee's trying to make friends with everyone in the office. Like, she wants to go out for lunch with Judy, but Judy is all, no. Like, she doesn't say, it's because I think you're sleeping with your boss, but that's why. Things start to move a little bit faster at this point, and we get to see a little bit of Violet's home life because we had heard at the start she's a widow with four kids. We see that at least one of her kids is, I guess, late teens, early 20s, and they're installing an automated garage car door, which is also like so many of these things are just seem like they're nice, good character and narrative scenes that end up being foreshadowing. The fact that she knows how to do this is foreshadowing for what happens to Hart, which is really enjoyable. But she's having this fun conversation with her son just about work, and he's just like, you need to smoke some pot. And I'm like, oh, this movie's taking a turn that I wasn't expecting, but I guess the late 70s, early 80s were more chill than I realized. And she's like, no, like your grandma wouldn't approve. And she's like, he doesn't. She's like, she doesn't know about moderation. So anyway, they agree that he'll roll her a joint and pop it in her bag, and that she's just has to play good at work because she's waiting to hear on this promotion that Hart is going to sign on in the next 6 weeks or so.
Yeah.
We then basically cut to her not getting the promotion and hearing from Hart that just like fully directly, absolutely people don't get promotions because a white man got the promotion over them, but they don't tell you to your face.
Yeah, they don't say anymore. Spare me the women's lib crap.
Well, yeah, to be clear, again, that's not a thing that's happened to me. But I'm pretty confident that it does happen out there. But they usually don't tell you to your face when you're being discriminated against.
Well, we would hope not. These days, anyway.
Hart's, I mean, he's an idiot. Even back in the 80s, you shouldn't tell people that you're discriminating against them. That's stupid. Violet loses her shit in like beautifully, where she really just kind of like lets Hart know what he thinks. And Doralee walks in And that's how Dora Lee finds out that everyone in the office thinks she's sleeping with Hart. She's furious because she's not, and he's gross, and she's very mad at him for perpetuating the idea.
Yes. Not and she threatens,
she says it in a more amusing way, but she does threaten to shoot his dick off, which was extremely funny to hear.
She's not afraid to use it, basically.
Turn him from a cock into a hen, I think is how she put it. And at this point, it's just like, I would follow any of these women, real life versions or characters, into battle. They're just so much fun. You know, you just, you kind of dream about having colleagues who are this good. And I've had a lot of coworkers who are spectacular and who I'm friends with in real life now. And it's like, yeah, this is also how you kind of like want to picture how cool you all seem. You want to be this trio. You want to be this cool trio with great outfits, threatening to shoot your terrible boss's dick off. It's like, this is very much a heightened version of real life. This isn't really what's happening. But, you know, it's how we want to picture it. So, yeah, this is when they fire a woman for talking about salary.
Mm.
Our trio have all cracked the shits separately and end up at the bar. Violet says this, like, a great line about being stuck in the pink collar ghetto. And I imagine this was probably a lot worse at that point in history. But, yeah, women would just – it was legal to just – actively discriminate, and just say that actually no, we're like, we just aren't going to promote you because you're women.
Yeah, you can't be a boss.
Suck it. You don't get to have equal pay because you're women. Mm. Equal pay had, I think, was just happening in Australia at this time in history.
Mm, okay.
And literally started, we're recording this. This is going to come out sort of probably end of the month. We're recording this right before International Women's Day.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a reminder of things like equal pay becoming a true political issue in Australia because a woman chained herself to a government building to protest about it. That was what it took.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Because it's so hard to really push back in the way that these characters want to when you've actually got to keep your job so that you've got an income coming in so that you can survive.
Exactly.
And that's how they keep you down, folks. That's how they keep you down.
Yep.
So Violet finds her joint in her handbag, like she told her son to do.
Yeah, it's so weird.
Well, it just feels, I don't know, it just feels like Reagan really did make America more conservative because things were clearly a bit more loose before that. And the America
it's not
we
loose
grew up,
now over there.
No,
with
the
Ben
America,
and all sorts of things at the moment.
Yeah, the America we grew up with and now is like terrifying. So we cut to basically then the ladies get stoned. It's delightful. We see that Dora Lee, this is when we find out she really did have the pistol in her purse. Wasn't just a threat. And that the only time she shot it, she accidentally shot through her purse, which is adorable. And then we have these fantasy sequences that are just
so
random and
delightful. What the hell's going on? Like, I was like, this is not the path I thought we would have been. I don't know what I was expecting. I didn't know anything about the movie other than it was just business ladies.
Yeah.
That's all I knew. And I thought there was going to be like business dramas and climb your way to the top kind of dramas. And then all of a sudden we're having like a black and white fantasy where
Judy's hunting.
Yeah, hunting him.
This great hunting outfit.
And I was like, what's going on here? And then I thought, okay, and the other girls will come into this fantasy. Like, we're just having a discussion. But no, there's three separate fantasies that happen.
I wasn't expecting the fantasies, and then I wasn't expecting there to be three of them.
Three,
I did enjoy
I
it, though. I loved it. I also thought then it was just going to be the dream sequence of all of the office people hunting him, which was pretty funny. And again, like, he does a great comic performance.
Yeah.
Dabney Coleman. Yeah. Fantastic comic performance. He ends up with his head mounted like, you know.
Like a deer. Because I like think he's got a deer in his office, doesn't he?
He does. Yeah, Judy noticed it on her first day. Again, everything in this script just falls into place. Nothing is wasted. Dora Lee's fantasy, she's like a cowgirl business lady and she sexually harasses him. It was so cute.
She hog-ties him.
And she goes does to later. Cook him. Yeah, and then she puts
him on a spit roast.
I'm glad that that didn't come true in the movie. That would have been a little bit too far. And Violet's fairy tale is like, because at this point I'm like, well, obviously Violet's getting one. I'm fully bought into what's happening now. Yeah. Where she's very much Disney Snow White and there's actual animated.
Complete with cartoon animals.
With cartoon animals following her around. And she tips the poison out of her ring, which it would be very cool to have a ring that you could hide things
full
in.
Of poison.
Yeah, I don't think I'll ever have
or
one
cocaine.
Because it's like, what would. Well, exactly. What am I going to put in the
I
ring?
I think they were more for drugs. Cocaine.
I don't. Yeah, I don't do drugs. I don't have poison. You're getting that from the early 2000s movie Cruel Intentions, where Sarah Michelle Gellar's character had cocaine in her big cross necklace. Look, which was an enjoyable movie and a great moment, and she was fantastic in that, as she always is.
And the second time we've mentioned Cruel Intentions in the last
two episodes.
We're
going to have to do it, aren't we?
It's coming, I'm sure.
I'm sure. Anyway, Snow White, Violet,
we
Snow
should
Violet.
Go and see Cruel Intentions, the musical, when it comes
we
out.
We should see Cruel Intentions, the musical. I've heard it's good, even though the posters make it look like the wigs are very bad. But again,
really
that's
bad.
Really bad. But again, I've also discovered about myself, I will notice a bad wig.
And what kind of music is it going to be? Are they going to sing Placebo? Like, the soundtrack, I remember the soundtrack for Cruel Intentions was amazing. Is it just going to be like, do we sing those songs and act it out? Or have they written like, I'm going to teach you how to kiss now kind of musical? What kind of musical are we going into?
You know
Go
what?
To the therapist's office.
I think we should get tickets and not do any research and just find out when we go.
Maybe.
So Violet's fairy tale is like, very cartoony, which was not what I was predicting for Violet when it became
for
clear.
Her at all.
When it became clear that was she was going to get one, she's like literally Disney Snow White-esque costume. She puts poison in the coffee and steam comes out his ears. It's all very Roger Rabbit. And then she slingshots him out the window. So it does become a proper murder in her fantasy, even though she's already poisoned him. And then all of her workmates are freed from a dungeon, which was pretty funny. Oh. Yeah.
Now, while we're doing these, what's your
fantasy?
How would you kill him? Why? Why do they have paper chains all around them?
No, I
did
don't
you
know.
Notice
I think
that?
I did notice that, and that was, I think, just
were
a way
them
of
as necklaces. Yeah, I was like, no, these aren't toddlers that are like, let's do craft while we get that was probably a point where I was like, that's a odd.
It was
kind
an
of
odd
thing
choice. I think it was like I assume that whose house are we in? No, that's right. I was thinking it was like maybe one of Violet's children made these, but it was Dora Lee's house, and Dora Lee doesn't have kids. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know why they had those.
I know, okay. And there was no explanation. It was just all of a sudden we're stoned and we're wearing paper chains, like that you'd make for Christmas down here in
they
Australia
were very
when you're in primary school.
Yeah.
Like it was an odd choice. It
was an odd choice. So anyway, at this point now, we're at a high point of the movie. Our three heroes, our three sort of like joint protagonists are best friends now. And Hart's wife is going on a 2-month cruise. So obviously
2 weeks.
Everything.
I thought it was 2 weeks.
No, it was 2 months.
2 months?
2 months.
Oh, I thought they kept saying 2 weeks. We've got 2 weeks. And then it had to be extended for six, like.
Yeah,
then they had
which
to
is the whole
extend it for 6 weeks.
No, that's the whole 8 weeks of she was always on the cruise for that amount of time. They just thought they originally thought they were going to have a week to sort everything out, and then that's why they had to do everything else. So anyway,
okay,
why they have to do everything else? Why everything goes?
It's a long time to go on a cruise.
It's an extremely long time to go on a cruise, but they're rich, and I don't understand rich people or cruises, so I can't comment. Violet accidentally rat poisons Hart's coffee.
Now, so this was really interesting how they did it, because she turns up to work the next day and she's like, oh, I'm the office manager. I have to go shopping in my lunch break to get like skim and I'm guessing is powdered milk. Skim and light or whatever.
No, I think it's
called.
Like one of those, it's like one of those artificial sweeteners.
Skim. Yeah. Okay. And then she's like, and skinny, I've got to get sweet. This and that and rat poison. And my ears pricked up with rat poison. I was like, that's weird. Why is she buying rat poison for the office?
Now, it doesn't make sense that she, in her role, can't delegate to someone to get all of those things for
I know. It doesn't make any. Her being so senior, it's weird.
Yes, that's the part that doesn't make sense. The part that does make sense is every office I've worked in has had some level of rodent problem.
Yeah, I get it.
I'm used to working.
It was just.
Yeah, within visual sight of a rat
trap. We've run out of the rat poison.
But I did like that they'd already established that he was always getting her to make the coffee and she found it really annoying. Mm. And we'd seen that bottle of Skinny and Sweet. It was a beautiful piece of art direction where in that scene, when it's happening, you absolutely get the chance to see what's happening. Like, I knew it was happening as soon as she said she was buying the rat poison and we'd had her fairy tale. I knew what was going to happen. It didn't make me enjoy it less. When she gets the packet out, she never looks at it, but you get to see the rat on the rat poison as she tips it into the coffee. It was beautiful. Mm. I thought it was beautifully done. Yeah. She doesn't realize she's done it until after Hart falls off his chair, which again, the business with his chair tilting back and him not having full control of his fancy office chair, already beautifully established. We get to see him on the phone right before this happens and get the sense that he's doing some kind of a dodgy dealings with some company called Ajax. He then tilts himself back, bashes his head on the credenza and spills the coffee, doesn't get to even drink the poison coffee.
Yeah, he doesn't even drink it, does he?
Nope, he doesn't drink it, but none of them know that at the time. Only the audience are privy to this.
Right.
I think it's just like nicely set up where we see it all happen, but it's extremely easy to miss it and not be sure if you drank the coffee or not as an audience member. And
yeah,
not be
I wasn't 100%
sure. If you may not have even like noticed. It's like pretty easy not to notice if she put the rat poison until she realizes she did it. I think it's just really nicely done that it's all there, but it's not shoved in your face. So Dora Lee ends up having to be in the ambulance as they take Hart off to hospital because he's like being knocked out. He's got like a head injury. I don't know why she's there. Because she felt like worried, I guess. This is where she's got that beautiful blue jacket with the lambswool collar. It's gorgeous. Anyway, Hart is the worst patient. They take him in. He's come to consciousness and immediately is like, you're just going to try and charge me medical fees. I am leaving. And then his doctor gets distracted with another patient.
Which is also America. I'm sure that happens a lot more than we realize.
Absolutely. There would be heaps of people for unfortunate reasons.
I can't afford to be
avoiding going
here.
To hospital. Yeah, no, it's terrible. The thing is, Hart actually could afford the medical fees, so I just feel like it's him being a prick. But in real life, there are definitely a lot of Americans who are just like, I can't actually afford to go to hospital.
I don't even know how people afford to have babies over there, to be honest. Like, it's insanity.
It is insanity. So Violet's had the realization that she put the rat poison in the coffee. Judy is trying to calm her down, but they go off to the hospital. And we get this great little bit of business where the poor person having a heart attack that Hart's doctor goes off to treat is actually a witness to a crime and there's cops there. Violet comes in and mistakes a conversation about a police witness who's been poisoned and has died, thinking that they're talking about Hart. And so she now thinks, I've poisoned and killed my boss. This is terrible. This whole bit's like, I found very funny. Not like super realistic or believable, but Violet thinks she's killed her boss and then decides she's going to steal the body to hide it so that they can't do an autopsy. Then she steals a doctor's coat with with a like with the name badge on it, identifying her as a doctor. Look, I find that whole sequence like it's pretty funny. Like, is it realistic?
It
no,
was pretty funny.
It was pretty shambolic, and it's down to the fact that these three actors, they're all really good. This whole sequence is so funny because they're all really talented. They're all really good at comedy. Lily Tomlin is just like, she's hilarious in this, but they all get their moments. Like, they're all very, very funny. So Judy and Dorian like end up back in the car, discover that Violet's stolen the body. They're not happy about it, but they're trying to like deal with it in a way that you're like, hope that if you went crazy and stole the body, that your friends would deal with it. Or conversely, if you found out that one of your best friends stole a body, you hope you would be that calm and deal with it that well. So they end up having a bit of a minor bingle in one of those like 1970s American cars that you can just like drive it into a dumpster, and it's just like, she's just nothing like, oh no, it's basically it. Fine. It's still drivable. Like, cars have crumple zones for a reason now, but you couldn't just do that. I was picturing my little, I got like this little like Mazda, like hatchback. That whole thing would have just folded up if you did that crash.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But also I don't have a proper like boot either. It's a hatchback, so I wouldn't be able to drive around with a body in my car. You'd have to fold that person right up and it wouldn't really work. So I guess I'm telling all of my work besties, this isn't going to happen to you. If I ever go crazy and have to steal a body, it's definitely not going to be in that car, and you couldn't fit three people in the front of it anyway.
Oh, God. This is, yeah, they're all in the front seat, aren't they?
Yeah, because it's an old like 70s bench seat. Do you remember when Dad had the Kingswood and it had a front bench seat and you could stick that many people in the front? No. You were tiny went then. Yeah,
I remember we hired a car like that when we were in Queensland. I didn't think that Dad's car was also like that though.
I'll have to double check that, but we definitely had, I do remember that having that big bench seat in Queensland because it was like six of us on that holiday. So this whole situation is really testing the togetherness of this trio of best lady friends. But at this point, Dolly does discover that it's not actually Hart who is the body. It's some person that they've never seen. They have no idea who this man is. So
she never bothered to check. I really thought when she first went up, I really thought she was just going to go up and look and then be like, oh, it's not him, and then we're going to go on to the next shenanigans. But
no.
I didn't expect it to turn into a, I'm not even going to check who is this dead body.
Same. I thought it would get resolved try in hospital.
Dispose of the body.
But no, we got the full stealing of the body, driving around like a maniac, crashing the car. It was awesome. So at this point, they're like, great, awesome. We've got a body. What are we going to do? They do resolve to take it back to the hospital. Again, the hard thing about doing a movie that was this good and funny is that it's just never going to be as funny describing what they did that was hilarious. Mm. So if you didn't watch it, go and watch it.
You have to see it.
You have to see it. I can't do them justice, which is why I just want to talk about their clothes because the outfits were all gorgeous. Genuinely, I do just want to dress like Lily Tomlin's character when I go into the office now. So that's great for me having this new fashion inspiration. So they go back to the hospital, but they do get pulled over by a cop on the way. Lily Tomlin gets to do this great business where she is still in the doctor's coat. So they pretend that she is a doctor and she's driving these two women who've been rat poisoned to the hospital. It's great. It's very funny.
Mm-hmm.
They do get the dead body back into the hospital, but they can't find out what happened to Hart. And the next day.
Yeah, he's gone too.
He's gone. And they decide, oh, well, what are we going to do? Well, we better just go to work tomorrow and act like normal, which is the most sensible thing they've done in the last 20 minutes of the movie. Yeah, absolutely the best plan. Done
from the start.
Yes, pretend you don't know what's happening. So they do go in pretending they don't know what's happening, and Hart rocks up to the office like normal because I assume he went home and had a good sleep.
He'd have
considering
a whiskey?
It's probably concussed.
Yeah, he would have had a whiskey and then had a sleep.
A cigar and 10 hours sleep and he was fine. They all have some great like double take moments where they realize Hart's like fine and in the office, and they were like pretty confident he was probably dead.
Mm.
So they all do the stupid thing after doing the sensible thing of showing up to work. They run to the toilets to be like, oh, we'll
have a conference in the toilet.
We've all done it. Have I had the toilet conference where I've said things that I didn't want overheard? Yeah, probably. But I mean, I've never accidentally rat poisoned anybody, so it's fine.
But they've also like talked about how Roz is always hiding in the toilets.
Yes.
So
they panicked and didn't think of it, and Roz is hiding in the toilets taking notes, and so she immediately runs to Hart to say, well, I just got all of this amazing news.
Yeah, they tried to murder you.
They tried to murder you. So, of course, Hart then, who did not drink the coffee or know about that until now, decides he is going to use it to try and get Doralee to give him sexual favours because he is the worst. She does actually then get to hogtie him with a phone cord and gag him with the scarf that he gave her that she gave back that
he'd
made Violet
buy
for his wife because she is a real cowgirl. Yeah, they lean hard into Dolly's dolliness and it's just delightful.
Yes.
She's so good. So then Judy gets left to guard him. Judy, I feel like Jane Fonda is the character who feels least like my image of Jane Fonda as a person. I just feel like she's tougher than Judy.
Yeah.
So he lies to her and she, you know, after he's been hogtied, she's guarding him and he gets loose. But he does threaten to call the cops. So she grabs, I guess, a little bit of Jane Fondiness from her soul and pull. I don't know if Jane Fonda's ever shot at someone, but I just feel like she could if she had to. You know, she's been arrested a bunch of times for protesting. I feel like if she had to get a gun and shoot near someone, she would have the guts to do it. So she pulls Doralee's gun out of her purse, which just happens to be on his desk, and she shoots the window next to him, which is a thing that happened in her fantasy. And now they're in a lot of trouble, so they kidnap him.
Because, let's escalate the situation.
I feel like the theft of the body has escalated the movie to a point where them kidnapping him and pulling it off feels plausible, though. So I feel like, again, this is beautifully written.
Does it?
Is it realistic?
I don't know if I agree with that.
But in the world of the movie, it's plausible. Like, no, it's not realistic for real life, but do I believe it would happen in this movie? Yeah, in the movie. Like, I also don't think, like, it's not realistic that she shoots at him, but in the movie, I believe that it would happen and that they're going to get away with it. So he's threatening that they're all going to go to prison, but it's a pretty weak source while he's tied to, like, a foofy chair at his house because, of course, his wife is on a two-month cruise and isn't there. So they were able to, like, kidnap him to his own home, which, again, makes everything a lot easier. So they first decide that they should find something to blackmail him with before they actually then work out, do they have anything to blackmail him with? He is a terrible enough person that they, and also a diligent bookkeeper. So they find some information about his Ajax account and discover that he's been doing some kind of fraud. We don't know enough
but
about
who knows
the business.
What? Because we know nothing about the business.
We don't
know
enough about
how
the business
we could do
to fully
insider trading or what's going on.
He did something bad and he's going to get fired.
He has a warehouse.
Out.
All he has, the bad thing is that he hires a warehouse. That's it.
Well, it's empty and it's not supposed to be empty. And literally that's as much as I really fully comprehended. It's like, oh, okay, it shouldn't be empty. Good.
What
understand
should it
now.
Have in it?
Inventory. What if, I don't know. It's extremely easy to believe that Hart's a bad man.
Yeah, I would have liked to. Look, I would have liked a little bit more information on to know just
That's
how
fair.
Deep shit that he would have been in. Like, are we talking that, you might get a slap on the wrist and demoted? Are we talking that you're going to get fired? Or are we talking that you're going to get arrested? What level of blackmail are we dealing with?
Yeah, because they felt very confident that it was at least arrest and it was extremely fuzzy for the rest of, like, Was it like crime or just bad? I don't know.
Yeah, you're just going to go, you shouldn't have done that. You're demote. Like, there was I would have just liked a little bit more information.
That's reasonable.
Just a touch.
But then they did move on to their confinement optimization montage where they really worked out how they were going to keep him locked in his house and contained for a week. And that was very funny where they, you know, used things that they've learned about from other sets of skills, like the cord that you use to open and close a garage door. That was pretty funny. I enjoyed that a lot. Mm-hmm. So Hart, like, continues to try to escape. Roz continues to want to talk to him in person. And that's their big problem. Doralee has to take him lunch so that he doesn't starve to death because, look, they have at least decided they're not going to murder him.
Once a day? Because there was I was a bit confused down the track where they're like, yeah, we're going to feed you and stuff. But then there's a bit of confusion when, spoiler alert, the wife comes home and finds him and then they only find out about that like 3 days later and they're like, oh, is he still there or has she let him go? And I was like, hang on a minute. Are you not bringing in lunch every day? What's going on here?
They're bringing him lunch every day. I'll explain that part when we get to it.
Okay.
Doralee comes from the office because they're all in the office every day, but Judy's there overnight. So I assume that also includes dinner and breakfast service.
Okay. Yeah, but how did no one have eyes on him for 3 days to not know that his wife had come home?
No, they did.
For there to be confusion if he was going to be missing or not.
They did, because she came and could have let him go, but he told her it was this new exercise regime so that he could get free, but then trick them into thinking he wasn't free so he could get on the phone and sort out all of the stuff.
Right, okay. Yeah. Okay, got it.
So the most realistic thing that happens in the movie happens at this point.
But still, there was confusion. They didn't know if he had escaped or not. There was a part where they were like, is he even still there? Has he gone? We haven't, like, there was like a, like,
yeah, but I think that was between that 3 days. No, I think that was between that morning and the call. Because they knew what had happened in the last 3 days.
Yeah, but they acted like they didn't.
They acted like they didn't.
I really felt like they were like, oh, no, has he been missing for 3 days and we don't even know?
But for me, the most realistic thing that happened in the movie happened at this point where they thought it would only take a couple of days to get the invoices they need to prove that he was doing bad things like embezzlement or something. But head office were doing software replacement of something and so it was going to take 4 to 6 weeks. The only part of that that's not realistic to me is that 4 to 6 weeks for a data conversion of software sounds very, very short. This is like a thing that I do in my job a lot. And yes, every time we decide to do a software change over something, it's a nightmare. So Roz is still being the massive problem. She really, really wants to deal with him face to face. So they get the idea. They're going to send her off for intensive language lessons overseas. We already heard that Doralee knows how to sign Hart's signature beautifully. So she does that. And then they start changing policy. And Doralee has the idea of, why don't we just make this place nicer and let people have photos on their desks and coffee mugs? And then Violet decides, okay, we're going to do real change. Now that we've got, you know, pot plants, let's introduce equal pay and daycare and part-time work and job sharing. Meanwhile, Hart just gets
progressive.
Very progressive. Hart gets to watch Days of Our Lives. It's pretty great. They hire back the woman who got fired. They start painting things. But then Hart finds a nail file and gets himself half undone. He gets himself half unhooked. This is a whole, like, montage section. We also see at this point there's like a guy in the office like kind of spying. This guy looks to me, you know the guy in what's the show about the big like shopping center, like Walmart shop, Superstore. You remember the head office guy in Superstore who then dates the guy who got, yeah. This guy who was like spying around the office, to me he looks exactly the same as him.
Oh, okay.
So because I noticed in this montage, it's like they're doing things like painting and this guy like peeking out from around the corner and taking notes in his little notebook. I'm like, who are you? Did you notice that?
I didn't notice him at all.
Okay. Well, I noticed that and I'm like, who is this spy guy?
Does he come up again?
Yes, he does. He does at the end. I'll explain it. But then
is
we
he
have
with
to
the colonel. Is he with the
he's
colonel?
He's with the colonel. Yeah. The chairman of the board. He's the guy who's reporting to the chairman about all of the things.
Right.
But you get this kind of vibe of like, who is this
office
spy?
I did wonder how the colonel knew about everything to come.
It was his guy.
The spy.
It was his guy who looked like the regional manager from Superstore. But then I got very confused because I thought, like, who is this office spy? But then Judy has been doing overnights at Hart's house to make sure that he doesn't get out, even though he does get out. And her ex-husband shows up and he's been casing the joint and stalking her, which is less charming
creepy.
Than she seems to think it is.
Creepy.
I did.
Yeah,
it was extremely
creepy. Yeah, I staked
the house
out for days.
It was
okay.
Because he really wanted to know if she had like a new boyfriend or was staying with someone. And she pulls out the, oh no, I'm house sitting for a friend very easily, which is like great. And also all he needs to know, even if that was true, all he needs to know, what a catch. What a gross dude he is. I did like her performance because when we see him at the start, when he shows up at her house to give her the papers, she's like has this moment of almost hopeful at seeing him again. And this time she's just not as
she's
into
busy.
It.
She's busy. She's got someone captive. She just needs him to piss off.
She does. But also she's like she's happy with her life. And they have this great argument where she's like, comes to the realization like in the argument that actually no, she is happy with her life. Mm. She doesn't want him back. He's come to win her back because literally he ran away with his secretary after the divorce and that lasted like a week and she left him. And so he's come back for her. She's not interested because, she's busy. He does eventually find Hart through, a series of events and think it's a weird sex thing. And she's like, yes, even though she literally doesn't
she's
know
got
what bondage
no idea.
Is. And she then it's very cute and sweet. It's very nice, but she has this moment of realization where she's like, I don't want you back. I'm fine. Like you leaving was the best thing that ever happened to me, even though she doesn't know what bondage is and it's not a weird sex thing.
I'm a career woman doing crimes now. See you later. I don't need you anymore.
She's got the best friends she's ever had, clearly. So why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you just be like, no, go away? So anyway, that's the last we see of ex-husband. So Hart's wife arrives back early and then she calls Doralee to thank her for the flowers because Missy is not as stupid as she might seem. She's not as unaware as she might seem. She puts together that Doralee has been actually sending the flowers.
Yeah, but I don't think that's a hard thing to put together.
No, it's not
I
a hard
I think
thing
it was
to put together.
Pretty dim that she just believed him when he said this is
he
a,
was trying out
a
new
exercise
program
thing.
And
she went,
gets sent away
okay,
to a hotel.
I'll go to a hotel again. Like,
I strongly get the impression that she does not. They say that she adores her husband, but does she? She went on a 2-month cruise and then was like
I still
really
can't get
happy.
Over that it was 2 months. I really thought it was 2 weeks.
2-month cruise and then she's really happy to be sent away to a hotel.
I know.
2 weeks is a long cruise in my opinion. I don't think she likes him really. Or at least absence makes the heart grow fonder in that situation. But yeah, that's the tip off where they're like, oh no, is he out? And they do panic and they go and discover that he has been tricking them and that he has sorted things out. There's inventory in the warehouse, which is, I guess, business code for he's not going to get caught for doing bad business things. Hart gets his hands on Doralee's gun and then they go back into the office and he gets his first look and we get our first look at what the office really looks like now. It's colourful. It's got natural lighting. It's diversely staffed. People are working flexible hours. And he's
I wouldn't say that it's colourful though. It's still pretty 70s.
It's 70s colourful. It's 70s. It's orange.
Still a lot of
like the
brown
70s.
And mustard.
Like the 70s. It's colourful for the 70s.
Nah, the 70s also had greens and bright colours.
You want to add green into the brown and green mix? No.
Anyway,
it's better than it was. Like, be fair, offices are not then or now, the most exciting places for interior design.
No, because I've still got to be a bit cheap. I described it as colourful. It's nicer.
It's heaps nicer than it was, is the point. And I think it makes the point pretty well. It's heaps nicer than it was. There are couches. People have pot plants. Like, again, it's an office. Like, come in at a really low level. It's better than it was. And he's like, no, 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 he's going to spill to the execs, he's going to reverse it. But then, no, the chairman of the board is about to arrive, someone we've, like, literally never seen and is almost never there. So he's there to meet Hart. And he comes in, he's this old southern white suit gentleman, like the colonel from KFC.
KFC.
Literally my only point of reference for a white southern gentleman in that kind of, like, an era.
Well, he kind of had a similar beard too, so he wasn't absolutely helping himself.
No, I'm sure that that's what they were going for, even though he then, I don't think, had a southern accent. I still read it as southern. He had that look. So we hear that, yeah, he'd learned about this from his office spy, Perkins. They had a 20% improvement on productivity of whatever it is they do over 6 weeks, which, look, that those numbers are good numbers, even if we're never going to find out what they do. They did it 20% more. The chairman loves what they've done with the environment, even if you're going to diss its colourfulness. He thought it was beautiful.
Oh, I think it was. Look, it was fine. I just wouldn't say that it's colourful.
Fair. Fair. The job sharing, the daycare. Tinsworthy, the chairman, did something similar when he was working in factories in the war. He set up daycare and he thinks it's great, although he does want them to stop their equal pay because enough is enough. Margaret, the woman who was always drunk in the office.
She's no longer in. It solved. It fixed her alcoholism.
In 6 weeks or less. She does look glam though. Like, it was a real turnaround where she's got, like, jewellery and this, like, nice dress and her hair and makeup are done. I wish getting my hair and makeup were done were that easy. I wish getting nice glam outfits was that easy. Anyway, it's all pretty great. Hart is just, like, blown. But he has done such a good job that he's getting a promotion. He's getting a promotion to go and work in Brazil, which, again, he seems to think is very bad. And I'm watching this movie going,
so this is kind of an international corporation then.
Yeah. And they did throw that out earlier in the movie that they never see the chairman. He's usually in Brazil doing something. So they did throw that out earlier in the movie that it's like it's all set up. But, yeah, it's, I don't know, some kind of international corporation doing things with inventory. He's getting promoted to Brazil, which to me sounds awesome. He is less happy about it. And
well, yeah, because he's an American white man that probably just wants to, you know, stay in America.
Yeah, probably. But also, I guess, part of the problem, the part I do understand, is that he didn't do any of these improvements that have led to his promotion, and he's stuffed now that he has to go and actually be good at his job. And we've seen he is barely incompetent at best. And that's almost the end of the movie. Basically,
yeah,
it wraps
up.
Yeah, it
kind of finishes.
Yeah.
It is a kind of like, and that's all, folks.
And that's it.
Kind of finishing,
and then
isn't it?
The ladies go into his office and pour themselves champagne, and Roz comes back from her intensive French lessons and
she's like,
is like, holy merde.
Bonjour.
Bonjour. Holy merde. And they all laugh and laugh, and I can't remember if it does a freeze screen or not, or if it just feels like it did.
Probably. There is a little thing that they like to do at the end of Housewives and things where they're like, Roz is now doing this. Violet is now doing this. Judy has done this.
I wrote them all down if you would like to know. So Violet.
I'd love it.
Violet was promoted to vice president of the company for her calm under pressure. Judy fell in love and married the photocopier representative. Which
oh,
is like,
I didn't read that one.
Yeah, okay, sure. I guess. Dorley quit.
They just wanted to call back to the photocopy scene. They just wanted us to go,
like,
remember
hey,
that photocopying machine
wasn't
scene?
That,
that
bit
was hilarious.
And we're all like, cool. Yeah, it was. Doralee quits to become a country and western star, which is lazy as, but it's Dolly Parton. We all know it's Dolly Parton.
Yeah.
Let's stop pretending it's not Dolly Parton. And Hart gets abducted in the Amazon and is never seen again.
Oh, I didn't see that part at all. I think I might have quite paused dramatic. And finished it. I think I might have just gone, and we're done. Off.
And it's over. Point. Movie's done. No, I paused every scene and wrote them all down because it's like, I picked the movie this week, so it's incumbent on me to.
His life destiny was to be kidnapped then, obviously.
Obviously.
Weird. What a weird little ending.
Those end of movie little like post-movie captions were way more common back in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah, they loved them. They don't really do it now, do they? No, only not for really. Reality shows at the end of the season to catch you up on what's happening now with them.
I just want to talk a little bit about the costume designer Anne Roth, because the costumes were so good. Mm-hmm. And literally, I just looked her up on IMDb. So she was born in 1931. She is still working as a costume designer now. Her most recent credit is the designer for White Noise, a movie that literally I saw in January and just came out.
Oh my God.
She did Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. She did.
When was she born?
31.
So she's 92.
Yeah, but still working, still being like a lead costume designer. She did the Birdcage. She did the English Patient.
Wow.
She just, how good is she? What a legend. Mm. She did Mr. Popper's Penguins, a movie your children are very fond of.
Yeah, they love it. It's actually probably, look, I'm not a huge Jim Carrey fan, but that's one that I can tolerate him in.
Yeah, me either, but she did Mamma Mia.
Okay.
She did The Hours. God, she must. Wow. I'm going to just check how many awards she's won because she must have won some awards. But I did just, I was really struck by how good and how thoughtful the costumes were.
And as a dance teacher, I really appreciate when it's obviously thoughtful costuming.
Yeah, and you learn about the characters and the story from the costumes. There's some movies
that you're like, yeah, the costumes are cool and, yeah, it fits, but there's some movies where it's just so thoughtful and you can tell that those colours mean things and it's not just era costumes and things.
You learn about the characters and what they're going through at that point in the story. Like, it is proper storytelling and costume, and that's what she did in this. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, no, she has won two Oscars, including in 2021 for Ma Rainey's Black Bottom and in 1997 for The English Patient. And she's been nominated for three other Oscars and she's won a whole bunch of Emmys and many, many, many awards, which is not shocking considering how good she is, but also how long she's been in the industry.
Oh, my goodness, I know. And still working.
That's amazing. Amazing. Anne Roth, what a legend.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the 80s there were a lot of movies that were about like businessy shenanigans. So I agree.
Well,
were
you recommended to watch Working Girl like straight after? Because I was.
I was
did
too,
did you watch this
yes.
on Disney Plus? Yeah, I did, and it was just like, watch this one now.
And it's like, cool, I understand why you're making that recommendation, but I have to go to bed. Because it's late.
Who directed this movie?
This was directed by Colin Higgins, who sadly had quite a short career as a director because he died in 1998 of an AIDS-related illness.
Oh.
Real shame because he only directed three movies. This was his second movie.
Okay.
Mm. He also, he had written a bunch of other screenplays that he's known for as well. But, it was a really good – it was a really good movie. He co-wrote the screenplay. It just feels like such a shame that he would have had a much longer, amazing career if he'd lived a bit longer.
I just had this weird memory that Eddie Perfect had something to do with 9 to 5, the musical.
Let's Google it.
Surely Dolly wrote it.
Oh, yeah, no. In the Australian, the original cast, Eddie Perfect was Franklin Hart.
Ah.
So So you didn't make that up.
So that was my memory from
you did absorb the ads some information on about Smooth it. FM. Probably shouldn't have hung on to this movie for so long because I enjoyed it at least as much as I thought I would. It was awesome.
I didn't really know what to expect. I actually thought it would be funnier. I don't know how I would have thought it would be funnier. I'm sure if I watched it again, I probably would find it very funny. But I feel I was quite startled by a lot of things happening in it. Just like, what the hell's going on? That it just kind of wasn't as funny for me for those reasons of like, why are we doing this now? Okay. Or maybe it's just okay. Not my sense of humor. I don't know. But I enjoyed it.
No.
But I. Good. Yeah, it wasn't as funny as I thought it was going to be for me personally.
What are we going to watch next time, Amy?
Okay, so I didn't really have a plan. I started kind of having this plan of like maybe I'll try and do from now on like try and find a common thread through from mm-hmm. your movie, like a bit of a pick something from it and like go off that. I thought that might be interesting to do. And then I was like, oh, maybe that's a little bit hard, but I am going to try and weave a little narrative here.
Okay.
It'll be a stretch, but I will try and do it. So you know that one of my favorite genres is, and we haven't done any of these types of movies yet, are World War II movies.
Oh, true. I thought you were going to say jungle action movies, but
no, and then you were confused going, but we have done jungle action movies.
That's what was happening on my face.
I do love war movies.
True.
I love them. Mm-hmm. I love them. And then I was like, well, what kind of war movie should we do? Because there's so many to choose from and I love a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, Dolly Parton was in this movie and she wears a lot of tassels and things. And we just saw a very gorgeous man last weekend who likes to wear tassels and things. We went and saw Harry Styles.
We did.
So I think we should watch Dunkirk, which has one Harry Styles in it.
Hey, you did draw the line there. You drew the line. Good work. Very different movie, but you drew the line. I'm very proud. I'm very impressed.
Well, they don't have to be similar movies. They might just have an actor that, or a thought that makes you go, oh,
exactly.
This reminds me of this.
Yeah,
I could have easily picked Cruel Intentions because we talk about that a lot in the movies that we watch. But
hey, and we'll get there. We'll get there, but no.
We will.
There we go.
But then I was like, yeah, we haven't done a proper war movie and I've never seen it and people rave about it.
And we haven't done a Christopher Nolan movie even though I extremely enjoy griping about him and his movie making techniques, even though I do also quite like most of his movies. I saw this once a while back and I am keen to watch it again. So great choice.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I look forward to watching Dunkirk.
Awesome. Well, join us in a fortnight, everybody, with Dunkirk.
All right. See you then, guys.
Bye. Bye. You can find us at youwatchedwhat.net, on Instagram as youwatchedwhat, on TikTok as youwatchedwhat, or anywhere you can get podcasts, including Spotify.